At DSW, we ask the important questions, like, what shoes are you going to wear? Whether you're prepping for wedding season, festival season, or just planning the ultimate vacay, the right shoes can make or break an RSVP. So own the moment. You've got big plans, and we've got just the shoes. At the perfect price, of course. Get ready to get ready with Designer Shoe Warehouse. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today, and let us surprise you.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
What a play!
Can you believe this?
No, I can't.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Off to the races, and he stays on his feet.
This is going to go the distance.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
Yesterday, we looked at the top 12 players in our consensus rankings. Today and tomorrow, the next 12. So 13 through 18 in the overall consensus PPR rankings right now on Fantasy Football Today. And who would that be? Devon Achan as the number 13 overall player. He was RB5 per game last year, but it was a strong year for running backs with five running backs averaging more than 20 PPR fantasy points per game. Justin Jefferson. He was not wide receiver 5 last year. No, he was wide receiver 30 per game in full PPR, 41st per game in non-PPR. He is clocking in at number 14 overall. Omarion Hampton, number 13 running back per game last season. He had a broken ankle in week 5, came back and split carries, but he had a lot of catches. He is number 15 in the overall rankings. Ashton Jeanty, not such a great year for Ashton Jeanty. He was RB15 per game, but struggled 3.7 yards per carry, second worst yards before contact per carry in the NFL. He's number 16. Derrick Henry was awesome. He was top 7 running back on a per game basis, and George Pickens was awesome. Those guys are 17 and 18. So Achan, Jefferson, Hampton, Jeanty, Henry, Pickens, plus Richard Eisenberg and Cummings. Hello, Richard Eisenberg and Cummings, the law firm. Hey, Dave.
Don't draft us. We're not going to get you fantasy points.
Hey, Jamie.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, Heath.
I might get you some fantasy points.
Oh, yeah? I don't buy it for 1 second.
What position could Heath play and get us fantasy points at?
A goalie.
Tight end.
Goalie is going to be, he's going to play soccer on ice. He's going to play goalie.
Soccer on ice.
Yeah. Excited for the USA game tomorrow, Heath?
That's going to be a 10 o'clock game, I believe. So I'm probably going to hear about that one in the morning.
That's a meaningless game. All right. I did have an email of the day about Christian McCaffrey from Jazz. We can do this quickly here. But Jazz just wants to point out that the last time McCaffrey had all that injured season 2 years ago, he was injured in the preseason. We knew he was hurt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, it's true. He was injured in the preseason, but didn't we think he was fine?
Yeah, he was practicing all the way up till week one. And then in the lead up to week one,
if this was a regular season, a week one game, he would be fine.
And then he didn't even play. So he was banged up. I remember him not being like full time in training camp. He might have even gone like a week plus without even practicing. But then he started to ramp up for the season. We felt pretty confident that he was going to play. And then the week of week one, he got hurt in practice. Shanahan lied about it, and you guys remember the rest. It sucked.
Okay, so it wasn't quite as simple as we knew he was super injured. It was was some, I don't know about deception.
Lying.
Yeah, okay, lying. Yeah, yeah, and it was a bad situation. But also, don't forget about the 2 years earlier in his career where he missed almost the entire season. All right, Beyond the Box Score has its own YouTube channel. You can just search for Beyond the Box Score on YouTube. You can listen to the audio feed, but did want to promote the great work they're doing there. More, longer episodes, yes, deep dives, but a lot of people really like that stuff, and it's very, very helpful to get you ready for your drafts. News and notes. Kyle Pitts, 3-year, $54 million extension with $36 million guaranteed. Jamie, does that change the rankings for Kyle Pitts at all, this long-term commitment?
No, but it's obviously encouraging that the Falcons, are showing that they want him to be there. The addition of Kevin Stefanski, I think, should be great for Kyle Pitts. The lack of, proven targets aside from Drake London should be great for Kyle Pitts. So it's a very good situation, understandably so, that there's going to be fantasy managers concerned about, can he produce at the level that we saw last year again? Can he do it with Drake London on the field? because a lot of his great games came when London were out. But I'm hopeful. I think just the really the addition of Stefanski should be huge for him. So I think Kyle Pitts will push to be a top five tight end. I would prefer to draft him closer to tight end 7 or 8. But he has that upside, as we've seen before in two of his seasons so far in the NFL.
He's been fifth in my projections or higher pretty much all offseason. And I think this just makes it easier for me to trust the Stefanski history and the talent we believe Pitts has. The fact that Atlanta's committed to him in this significant way makes it easier for me to trust the projections.
But, and Adam, you mentioned this, 12 games with Drake London last year, he averaged 9.6 PPR points per game. That's good for a tight end, I guess. We're looking for more than that. We're at double digits on average would be good for a tight end. And anything north of like 11, 12 would be amazing. And so I want to settle for Kyle Pitts on draft day. I don't want to target him. I don't want to take him as one of the first five tight ends off the board. But I do see some appeal, like the fellas talked about.
I'm not really a Pitts guy, but the appeal to me is that he's going 95th. And even if you're not a Pitts guy, right. You know, that's even if he averages 9.6, he'd probably do a little bit better than that. But, you know, to justify 95th overall, if he gets you to 10.5 points per game, it's really not that bad of a pick.
Nope, not at all.
Okay. So there's not going to be a supplemental draft for Brendan Sorsby. Although.
Right call.
Aw.
Right call?
Right call.
Right call.
I mean, I don't think they've done this to someone. Been like, sorry.
Have we ever had a guy that placed 10,000 bets on college football while he was playing?
I mean, Kayshon Booty was arrested for gambling, and then he didn't have any repercussions. He
had already been drafted into the NFL, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Was he?
He went through the regular draft.
But they didn't suspend him.
Jameson Williams was suspended for gambling.
He wasn't suspended for a full season. He gambled when he was in the NFL. So Kayshon Booty didn't. To me, the equivalent would be like they suspended Kayshon Booty for his rookie year after he was drafted.
Kayshon Booty bet while he was in the NFL?
No. Well, he bet when he was in college.
Okay.
Including, I believe, LSU games, I believe. I don't know. I don't really think it's the right call. I mean, I think
it's the boring call. We wanted to see this happen in the chaos that would unfold.
He's just happy because he's off the hook for having his rookie draft.
Oh, dynasty commissioners who have already had the rookie drafts are extremely. This is the right call. But I just think the other thing is like what they said makes perfect sense. They don't have enough time before the supplemental draft was happened to investigate like what exactly he's done to get over this problem.
Oh, come on. I don't know.
And it doesn't sound like he's shown it enough contrition to them.
Okay. I just think
boring. They should have done it.
I just think that it seems like they're being a little selective with this criteria. Mike Florio went through and said there's nothing in the CBA that talks about that kind of stuff.
He's not represented by the union. The CBA doesn't apply to him.
But it does outline rules for the supplemental draft.
At the NFL's discretion.
They're going to, I think, probably sue, and we'll see what happens.
Right. I would assume so after the last 6 months.
Yeah, it's not like I have a ton of sympathy for him, but you know, you can't gamble on games. But you know, he's not a criminal. I think you should let him move on with his life. All right,
they will. He'll get drafted next year.
No, he can go play football in Canada.
This is a real big setback for his career.
Yeah. Can I win my league now?
It is. Okay, fine. Nate Atkins of The Athletic, in case you're doing a rookie draft now, which is silly, he said, so far in Rams camp, neither Ty Simpson nor Stetson Bennett have stood out ahead of the other to be the backup to Matthew Stafford. And yesterday...
When do you think it's not silly to do a rookie draft?
December.
December.
Yeah, as I said. Like I said, yes, you said, let's get the rookie draft going for Bakeburger. I said, it's not going to happen before December. I want to see these guys in action before we draft them. We should know. Now, I think, look, there are some wide receivers out there and maybe running backs too that are free agents or in Brandon Ayuk's case could be traded that could certainly impact the way you feel about a rookie. I'll use the J.K. Dobbins example. I drafted R.J. Harvey, and then J.K. Dobbins got signed, and that I wouldn't have drafted R.J. I don't think I would have drafted R.J. Harvey where I drafted him. It's a big deal. So if Stephon Diggs goes to a place that has a rookie wide receiver that you like, I think you're probably going to knock him down a few spots. So I would say training camp. I don't know why you have to do it now. The season, you know, the season doesn't start until September. Why do we have to do a rookie draft now? Why? There's just no reason. Just impatient.
I think the idea would be is to, first off, it's fun. That's the most important thing. Second of all, like, it encourages trades because then somebody may say, oh, Adam's pissed about R.J. Harvey now that J.K. Dobbins is there. Maybe I'll offer him a second-round pick for 2027.
No, that doesn't encourage trades. No, the J.K. Dobbins signing with the Broncos doesn't encourage trades. Just ruin someone or just hurt someone's value.
Also, when we get to training camp, we're going to get to draft 6 times a week, every week for 6 weeks. I'd like to do a draft right now.
Yeah, but it's you're fun. A fantasy analyst. Most people aren't doing that many drafts. You go.
I don't know one dynasty league that I'm in where people were like, oh man, we should really wait. This sucks, except yours.
Yeah. I understand that like you're itching to
David
do a draft.
Muted. He's trying to talk.
Oh. Yeah, you're itching to do a draft. I get that. But that's the only good reason for doing a draft right now. All right. Anyway.
Could Keith chime in on this one? Would it be bad if a dynasty league did a 2-round rookie draft or even a 3-round rookie draft now and then another draft, maybe reverse order, when training camp starts for all the rookies that didn't make it and might be getting some buzz along with what other veterans are on the waiver wire?
I'm okay with whatever a commissioner wants to decide. I just wish this commissioner would decide and give us a date for the draft.
Roughly late July. What's the big deal? Roughly late July. Okay.
I'm going to be at Glacier National Park for a lot of late July, so I'd prefer it not.
You'll be fine. It's an untimed draft. You'll be fine. And Geno Smith yesterday said it seemed like the investigation, his assault investigation was going to be wrapping up, but not the case. He is being investigated right now for assault. So another bad headline, but don't know what happened. That's Geno Smith. All right, we're going to take a break and come back and get into players 13 through 18 in our PPR consensus rankings. Devon Achane, can you be on what we think is going to be a bad offense and not a high pass volume offense and have a great season? Well, you have to probably go back to 2025 Devon Achane. We'll explain more after this on Fantasy Football Today.
The days are longer, the calendar's filling up, and I want to feel as good as this beautiful summer weather. That's why I've been loving Grooms. It's one daily pack of gummies that covers my greens, vitamins, minerals, and even has 6 grams of prebiotic fiber. So I don't need to juggle a complicated wellness routine on top of everything else. They taste amazing. They're easy to toss in my bag on the go. Plus, they're vegan, gluten-free, and HSA, FSA eligible for reimbursement. Save up to 52% off with code PODCAST at Grooms.co. That's code PODCAST at GRUNS.co.
The Dolphins were 25th in scoring last year, and they could be worse than that. You know, there could be a big difference between 25th and 30th, for example. But they were 25th in scoring last year. You probably knew they were not good there, but did you know that they were 30th in pass attempts per game last season? They threw 28.2 times per game. And Devon Achane had 67 catches. He had over 80 targets, and he was the number 5 running back in PPR. And that was with Tyreek Hill for 3.5 games, but Jaylen Waddle for much of the year. Anyway, 13th for Achane. Dave, what do you think?
I'm okay with it if you want to get a running back with PPR upside, but you cannot expect him to do what he did last year. I've talked a lot about 20% declines with running backs that have a lot of work. I think we're looking at a 20% decline for Achane for a different reason. This is an offense that's similar as far as the playbook goes, but different in how it will operate. The track record of play caller Bobby Slowick and quarterback Malik Willis suggests exactly that. And we saw it already last year. You referenced this before the break. Devon Achane with Tua, 14 games last year, 20.8 PPR points per game. We love that. 2 games without Tua, 16.1. And so if we take his average from last year, we deduct 20%, which I think is going to be fair. I think his targets are going to go down by 20%, if not more. Then we're talking about a running back that, if things are okay, can still get you 16 PPR points per game. And that's right in that range of other receivers we talked about yesterday and we'll talk about today. End of round one, beginning of round two, much different story in non-PPR. Although maybe not that much of a difference. I just don't think he'll score as much. the last point I'll make on Achan, you mentioned it, 85 targets, 67 catches, almost 500 yards receiving, four touchdowns. That was last year. It was 43% of his total PPR points coming through the air. And if that drops because Willis doesn't check down, because the play caller doesn't call plays designed to Achan, because Achan maybe doesn't play as much, oh boy, we could be looking at a disappointing year from him.
You mentioned that he may not score that much. He didn't score that much last year. Scored 12 touchdowns, I believe, last year.
That's a lot. I'm not sure he'll score that many this year.
It's the fewest of any running back who finished top five. In fact, since in the last five seasons, since we've had a 17-game schedule, there have been 9 running backs in the last five seasons, so almost 2 per year, who have finished top five in full PPR with 12 or fewer touchdowns. And Achan's done it twice. And by the way, Bijan Robinson did it last year, and he was RB2. So I think all the things that you can say about Achan, he won't score that much. They won't throw a lot. Their offense will be bad. They all applied last year. I think we're worried that all three of those things are going to be even worse this year. Heath, is 13th too high for Achan?
I think for me, and if I'd been here, probably would have said the same thing about McCaffrey earlier in the week. But for me, Achan is probably the scariest guy at the 1-2 turn, both because I think if you pass on him, you might be passing on a league winner. And I think if you draft him, you might be drafting a bust. I think the talent-wise, like, there's no doubt. I worry about Malik Willis's running back target rate, but the sample size is so minuscule that I don't want to take too much of from that, especially when we're talking about a team that literally does not have a wide receiver that, like, we're drafting in the top 150 picks.
Right.
So, like, who are they going to throw to if they don't throw to Devon Achane, besides Greg Dulcich, because obviously we know he's going to be awesome.
Let me give you the story on Willis and his target rate to running backs. Minuscule in the NFL, 13.1% target rate. Heath, I assume you would agree that that's a low rate.
That's a low rate. When I said minuscule, I meant the number of passes he's thrown.
That's fair. I get it. And so, sample. Sure. So small sample because he hasn't been a starter, hasn't played that much in the NFL. But in the NFL, when he's played, it's 13.1%. He played a lot in college. 9.1% was his running back target rate in college.
Who throws the running backs in college, though? They just don't really...
Almost nobody.
Yeah, they just don't really do that. But it's the pass attempts for Willis. I mean, I don't think he's thrown still more low than like 24 in a game or something like that. It's shockingly low. Jamie, your thoughts on Achane real quick. Not real quick. And then we'll get to our next guy.
I mean, very similar to what the guys have said. The over-under for his touchdown, the player prop is 5.5 from Vegas. So that tells you what his rushing touchdown total could be, which is not very good just by comparison. Breece Hall doesn't score a lot of touchdowns. That's the same number for him. Same number for Ramondre Stevenson as well. So you're looking at, you know, low touchdown potential for a team that may score very much. So I think really the receptions crater, we're going to be in trouble. So if that's what goes away,
right,
rushing production will still be, I think, okay, because I do think this is going to be one of the more underrated offensive lines. I think they've done a good job of filling this unit up, and I think that will actually be a strength. But again, Willis is not going to do the same things that Tua Tagovailoa does. And it's funny, like, if you look at the running backs just based on our consensus rankings, one above and one below, if he was Chase Brown on the Bengals, we would probably be talking about him as a top five overall pick. He was Omarion Hampton with Mike McDaniel still on the Chargers, we'd probably be talking about him as a top five overall pick. So I think just looking at the team, it's really about the team, and the context right now is just not great in where he's at. So you know, I see some comments on the chat here about Ken Walker. Yeah, you can make an argument Ken Walker's in a much better situation than Devon Achane. Just a matter of, you know, who you trust more at this point. So I think Achane belongs in round two. It's a matter of where you want to take him in round two. Like he said, you know, you get to the 1-2 turn. Just to reference the draft that we recently did last week, like, I passed on him at that spot. You know, I took James Cook and Justin Jefferson ahead of Devon Achane, which is how I have ranked.
Okay. So Breece Hall, I think, is a good name to mention because if you're looking for an inspiration, 2023 Breece Hall, he was the number 2 running back in PPR, but number 6 per game, number 5 per game in half PPR. Not that good, though, in non-PPR, 11th per game. But in that year, he had 223 carries. He had 76 catches, averaged 4.5 yards per carry. The Jets were 30th in points per game. They threw a lot, though. But they also had Garrett Wilson with 168 targets. So he's one inspiration for Achane. Breece Hall in 2023. Terrible offense, a ton of catches. The other guy I think would be Kamara in 2024. The Saints actually weren't that bad when he was playing. They were 13th in points per game when he played, but they were 24th in points per game for the full season. But he's another guy. He averaged 4.2 yards per carry. Achane should do better than that. He had 68 catches, 228 carries, 68 catches. That was good enough to be a top six running back per game in half and full PPR. Okay, next up is Justin Jefferson. Man, when I look at comments, Heath, about Jefferson, I see them just run the gamut. I think I see them be like completely, there's nothing in the middle. People were like, oh, you're crazy. Justin Jefferson 14th. You know, he's going to be so good. Or I'm not touching Justin Jefferson 14th. That's kind of the feel I'm getting right now. Heath, what do you think about Jefferson this year?
I think if you're looking for somebody who's lukewarm on Justin Jefferson, it's probably me.
Okay, found him.
And it's not, my feelings on him aren't really that much different than Achane, because I do think, again, at that 1-2 turn, he's a guy who could really make or break your season. And I think I could see both possibilities. Kyler Murray either should be better than J.J. McCarthy, or J.J. McCarthy should be better than he was last year. I don't really have any reason to doubt that Justin Jefferson lost a step or anything. I'm not so sure it's going to be a high-volume pass offense. And Jordan Addison definitely matters in this offense. So I'm not sure we get 10 targets per game from Justin Jefferson. I'm not sure he has the top 3 to 5 wide receiver upside this year. But I do think it's a big bounce back season for him. It's just he could have a bounce back season and still be a bust at the 1-2 turn.
What would that look like?
Well, I've got him at 16th overall. So I guess I'm a little bit lower. And I've got him projected for 99 catches, 1,300 yards, and 6 touchdowns.
Yeah. So you guys, let's compare him to, let's say, Nico Collins, George Pickens, and A.J. Brown. Does Justin Jefferson have more upside than all three of those guys, A.J. Brown, George Pickens, Nico Collins?
I would say similar.
Yeah, very similar.
I mean, again, like if you're talking talent, he obviously has more upside. If you're talking situation, circumstance, all the things that go into play with his quarterback and the talent around him, then I think it's, you know, certainly arguable. So, look, you know, we're hoping Kyler Murray is the answer. And it's, I think, easy to make an argument on both sides of it because we've seen the pros and cons of what Kyler Murray has done. You know, he has one season with a receiver of this caliber. And it was the first season he was paired with DeAndre Hopkins, who was a very similar age to what Jefferson is now. And Hopkins was a superstar that year. And so Jefferson can certainly do that. You look at the games Jefferson played last year with Carson Wentz. It was 16.6 PPR points per game in 5 games. Carson Wentz played a game and a half of that with, you know, a bad left shoulder. In one of the games, he could barely lift his arm. You know, so is Jefferson capable of doing that? I think if that's the number you're looking at, then this is the range that you're drafting him in, which is very similar to the numbers we talked about with Drake London yesterday, who was a 16.8 point per game guy. So, you know, the hope would be is that Jefferson's talent, Kyler Murray's talent, Kevin O'Connell's offense, all those things come into play and we get the type of player that Jefferson's capable of. Now, I think the question is he a bust or does he, you know, live up to the expectations of the people that are pro JJ? You know, like, you know, again, I like to see the comments in the chat. So Kevin Bowers says, I have the 13th pick. I'd love for JJ to fall. I think a lot of people that are pro Justin Jefferson are hoping that we're getting peak Justin Jefferson and top 3 caliber player, forget alone, let alone wide receiver. So that to me is not realistic in the current framework of where he's playing right now, because I don't think Kyler Murray, even in Kevin O'Connell's offense, is capable of helping Justin Jefferson get back to that level of production because, as Heath said, Jordan Addison, the addition of Juwan Jennings, TJ Hockenson still there, and this is still a team that wants to be balanced and run the ball. So I think Jefferson is in the next tier of wide receivers, you know, after you get past really the top 4. I think you can make an argument certainly with him versus Drake London. But once you get past the top 4, It's Jefferson, London, Lamb, those type of players. You want to throw Nico Collins, A.J. Brown, George Pickens. It's definitely worth debating all those guys. And maybe if Malik Nabers and Rashee Rice had no health or issues, they would be in the conversation too. So I think Jefferson, late round one, early round two, that's the perfect spot for him. Like Heath said, you know, you're hoping that he doesn't take that or play at the same level that we saw, produce at the same level, because I think he still played fine, but produce at the same level. Hopefully it's just Kyler Murray being – you know, able to bounce back and motivated and all the things that we see from him. Can he help, you know, get that type of production out of Jefferson, or at least the Carson Wentz type of production out of Jefferson, which I do think is realistic.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's my question. If Jefferson has similar upside to A.J. Brown, Nico Collins, and George Pickens, does he have more downside than all of those guys? And if he has similar upside and more downside, then why would I rank him ahead of those three players?
I would argue he's got a little more upside than those three players, and that's why. We've seen him before last year, 2023, well north of 18 PPR points per game each of those 2 years. I don't know if we've ever had a Nico year that good. I know we've had an A.J. Brown year that good, and I don't think we've had a Pickens year that good. So there's a little bit more to Justin Jefferson's ceiling, but everything has to go right, and that includes Kyler Murray playing at a level better than where he was at in his last few years in Arizona. And I've watched a lot of Arizona film lately because I'm trying to get a beat on their offense with Mike LaFleur. And Kyler was way more bad than good last year. Just not on the same page with his receivers. A lot of off-target throws. His deep throws were ugly especially. And that does make me nervous about Jefferson hitting that upside. But I also think he's going to get 10 targets per game because he's always gotten around 10 targets per game. Even last year when he absolutely sucked, he was getting around 10 targets per game, maybe a little bit lower than that.
Not really, though. Like, because the last
he was, especially with Wentz, he was.
Well, with Wentz, I think yes, but
the one, the one big, like, I'm not saying Carson Wentz is a better passer than Kyler Murray. I don't think that's true at this stage of their careers, but then those games, that five games that Wentz started, they averaged 35.4 pass attempts per game. I don't think Kyler's ever averaged 34, and he's been lower than that most years. So I think, like Dave was talking about, a 20% reduction for Devon Achane. I think it's probably, if you're talking about Kyler versus those Wentz games, it's probably at least a 10% reduction in the number of pass attempts that they're going to have. So,
and that could mean a 10% reduction in targets. Now we're talking about maybe the low eights per game. Because you're right, Adam. It's not like he's a lock for 10 targets per game. Even in 2024, I was wrong. 9.1 targets per game. Last year, he was around 8 targets per game. But I still think he's going to command the most targets easily in Minnesota. That's not saying anything.
Sure.
But it's also, you know, again, looking at Kyler's history, he's never had, including Hopkins, a receiver of this caliber. He's never had a play caller of this caliber. And so will that allow him to be a little bit more open and free? And obviously, what trust level will Kevin O'Connell have in him? It's an unknown. We just don't know how this is all going to, you know, play out in terms of how this team is going to look. We're also asking, you know, he said they're going to, you know, lean on the run or run the ball. I don't know how you phrase it, but, you know, Tina wants to run the ball, which makes sense. But we're asking that from a 32-year-old lead running back and a guy in Jordan Mason who's been a career backup. So is that where the focus of the offense is when they go out and they add a third wide receiver like Jennings, which they didn't need and certainly is a luxury, and now you have Jefferson, Addison, Jennings? Like, this is a passing attack that if there was a strong quarterback here, we would be saying Cowboys, Bengals, that type of situation.
Yep, sure.
There's that much upside. So,
well, but they have again, a great defense.
A lot of, well, I'm sorry.
They have a great defense, though. That's the difference.
They do have a great defense, but I think the defense takes a little bit of a step back. They lost a lot of key personnel this offseason. So, you know, I think just in the case of Kyler, again, this is where the unknown is. So, you know, to compare him to Nico, who has a very inconsistent CJ Stroud and maybe some more competition for targets that were, you know, a little different for Nico Collins this year with Tank Dell back and a better Jaden Higgins. You know, A.J. Brown's obviously a wild card because he could be amazing with Drake May, or he could just be the same type of player we saw last year, which, you know, I think I would argue Justin Jefferson's upside's more. George Pickens is clearly second on the team in terms of where his targets will be. So if you're looking at that, you know, comparison, I just think in the case of Jefferson, there is a lot of hope, and you're banking on his skill level, his talent level, his history of production. And again, if you're nitpicking and you're saying, okay, this was all J.J. McCarthy, which I don't think is necessarily fully fair, but obviously it's the main reason why he struggled. I go back to, again, to the Carson Wentz games, and is just that from a production standpoint, forget about, like Keith said, we're not talking about Kyler versus Carson. It's not really about that. It's just a production standpoint of what Jefferson still was able to do with a more competent quarterback. And if Kyler Murray, I think, is competent in this offense, we saw it with Nick Mullins, we saw it with Josh Dobbs, we saw it with other quarterbacks in Kevin O'Connell's system when Kirk Cousins blew out his Achilles. There's a track record here of just Jefferson still producing with almost anybody who's throwing the ball except J.J. McCarthy. Mm-hmm. So the hope would be is that Kyler Murray gets him back to that level of production. Again, the Wentz level of production. Anything above that, you're talking about a superstar. So yeah. I'm hoping for 16 to 17 PPR points per game, and I think Jefferson can deliver that in that 10 to 15 range in your drafts.
Okay. I just looked. It was 16.3 points per game in the games with Carson Wentz.
Yep.
So I think I've got him projected for just a little bit less than that, but very, very close. Like, but 15.5 sounds great.
But didn't he not score a touchdown? He didn't have a single touchdown in those games, and he still averaged 16 points. That's insane.
Yeah,
that is the Vegas line.
He's a very good receiver.
The Vegas line for him is 1,200 receiving yards and 7.5 touchdowns.
Yikes! Well, Vegas lines, you know, look, they can't project 17 games for everyone, or you know, everyone would take the under on every player, and right, so you have to. They're going to be a little lower because 1,200 yards sounds pretty low. I'd go
over on the yards and under on the touchdowns, probably.
Last year was only 1,048 yards in 17 games with bad quarterback play. Okay, let's get to our next two guys. Let's lump them together. Omarion Hampton and Ashton Jeanty, a couple second-year running backs who finished about, you know, pretty similar in points per game. They were both 16th or 17th per game in non and half PPR. Hampton was 13th per game in full PPR. Jeanty was 15th per game. Hampton had 32 catches in 9 games. Jeanty, 55 catches in 17 games. You've got new offensive minds for both players. You've got better offensive lines for both players. Better offensive times for both players. I'm going to keep the rhyme going there. So who do you like better, Heath, Hampton or Jeanty?
I currently have Omarion Hampton just a touch higher than Ashton Jeanty, but I think I've changed that 3 times this offseason already. I've got them both right around 15 fantasy points per game. I think I would say that I think the upside's maybe just a little bit higher for Jeanty if everything goes right, but Mike McDaniel in Los Angeles and the general state of the Chargers offensive line, quarterback, everything else makes it more likely that things go right for Omarion Hampton.
Dave, who do you like better, Hampton or Jeanty?
I'm glad I'm not the only one that's gone back and forth between these two, and I would imagine that this is a decision that a lot of fantasy managers are going to have to make. I agree with Heath, Hampton over Jeanty, but it's close.
Jamie?
Hampton over Jeanty.
Is it close?
Of course.
Have you flip-flopped?
I have not.
All right, so at least one of us hasn't flip-flopped that much. I've got my reasons too, but it's damn close. They're both really good. There's just so much potential for both.
I am more worried about Hampton losing touches to someone else. Mm-hmm. Than I am Jeanty, but I'm also more worried about the Raiders having like 6 rushing touchdowns as a team than I am Hampton.
It's funny you say that, because that's really my concern for Jeanty, is that you have Clint Kubiak coming from Seattle, where he loved to use 2 running backs, and they drafted a guy that I think a lot of us were hoping to see end up someplace else in Mike Washington. And so I know Kubiak has said you don't take a player like Jeanty off the field, he's compared him to Christian McCaffrey. I get all that. But I just wonder if his history and the player that's, you know, knocking on the door behind him, which shouldn't take Jeanty off the field for significant stretches, but maybe for some key opportunities, mostly at the goal line, given Mike Washington's potential. I just wonder, like, Hampton could lose reception totals to, my guess would be, Keaton Mitchell more so than Kamani Vidal. But I do think that we could see both guys coming off the field. I just look at Kubiak's history, and it suggests, like, okay, we may have a problem here if Mike Washington is actually good.
Washington is 6'1", 223 pounds. So that's a profile for a short yardage back, I'd say. But Jeanty is also, you know, big and handle that. Washington is kind of like a Ken Walker back in that his profile anyway is a home run hitter. A lot of like 0 and negative yard runs, a lot of home runs. But look, I don't think we're too, right, as you said, I don't think we're too concerned about him taking away major opportunities from Genty. For Hampton, I want to point out with the catches that, you know, Hampton was on pace for 60 catches. But if you look at it, it was the only time he got a lot of targets was when either Najee Harris was out or Kamani Vidal was out, basically. Other than that, he would get two targets, basically. It's kind of weird, though, because it's not like Najee or Vidal were actually getting a lot of targets. So I don't know what to make of it, but he would
They trusted those guys more in pass protection, right?
Yeah. It could be that. I also wonder if it had to do with the offensive line. What was the offensive line like in the games where Hampton had a lot of targets and catches? Because if it was Swiss cheese, Herbert was probably checking down a lot more often.
I mean, maybe. I'm going to just go ahead and say I don't think he comes close to 60 catches.
Agreed.
But you know,
it's a big number.
You do have Mike McDaniel
big number.
With that history.
Yep.
I think that, you know, the thing with McDaniel is he got two very different seasons out of his running backs. He had a season with Raheem Mostert where he led the league in rushing touchdowns. He had a season with Devon Achane, which he was one of the most prolific pass-catching running backs in the league. And so here you have Hampton, who showed a lot of great things last year, pre-ankle injury, post-ankle injury, when, to Dave's point, the offensive line was Swiss cheese. I mean, I just love the idea of Mike McDaniel having this type of player at his disposal and this offense at his disposal. And so hopefully you get a healthy Joe Alt and a healthy Rashawn Slater, and now you have what could be one of the best offensive lines in the league with one of the most creative play callers in the league with a first-round talent at running back. So it's obvious that these two guys should be drafted very close to each other. I certainly understand if somebody wants to take Genty ahead of Hampton. Genty got a significant offensive line upgrade with Linderbaum, and Kubiak should be much better, and the passing game should be much better with the addition of both quarterbacks that they got, whether it's Mendoza or Cousins, whoever's going to start the majority of the games. Hopefully it's Mendoza, and he looks like the player we saw at Indiana. So there's just a lot to love about both these guys, and when you start to compare them to the running backs ahead of them, McCaffrey and his questions, Achane and his questions, Chase Brown and his, you know, up-and-down performance last year with or without Samaje Perine, like, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to say, why is Genty not ahead of those guys? And ADP, I think, suggests it with Chase Brown for sure. And the same thing with Hampton. Like, you know, there's just so much to love about both these guys. Could we be wrong? Could Keaton Mitchell be the pass-catching back there? And then, you know, we're looking at a, you know, sub-30-catch season for Hampton? Sure. Could Genty still be good but not great and, you know, continue to get all this work on an offense that is led by an aging and, you know, failing Kirk Cousins at this point, or just a not-ready-yet Fernando Mendoza? Like, there's a lot of things that can go wrong. Yeah. But the upside to me is worth it. So I love these guys in early round two.
Okay, I got to take a break. Sorry, Heath. I'll get to you and just let's take a break. Heath, you can hop in as soon as we're back to talk about Hampton and Genty. We'll be right back. We're back. Hampton versus Genty. Heath, you were saying?
Well, this isn't really a Hampton versus Genty comment as much as it is maybe a transition into the next guy we're going to talk about. But the three guys who are directly ahead of these rookies in my projections are three guys that I have a hard time with in the rankings versus them. It's Derrick Henry, obvious reasons, not just the age, but losing the center that Genty just gained, losing the fullback, new offensive coordinator. It's Saquon Barkley, who may have more upside, but didn't look near as good last year. And then it's Josh Jacobs, who could have more volume and could be on a better offense than Genty, but also has the legal problems. And so I think comparing these young guys to those old vets is what I struggle with, as much as I struggle with comparing Genty to Hampton.
Oh, I'm so
I like
annoyed.
Walker better than Alma.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm so annoyed that you said this because I was about to say the same thing. Because the hardest part I have here is, like, it's not Genty versus Hampton. It's what about Henry and Barkley and, yes, Kenneth Walker and not Jeremiah Love for me, but maybe for some people, and Josh Jacobs, who was arrested on and then released on domestic violence charges, but I think they haven't charged him yet, as I recall. It's a big tier of running back, right? Isn't it? I mean, the fact that the two young guys are at the top, excluding Love, I feel like the only reason they're at the top is because they're young. I don't know. It's
not just because they're young, but because those older guys all have concerns.
So, well, do you think they'd be ahead of Jacobs if Jacobs didn't have any off-field issues?
Probably.
I would rather have the two young running backs.
It would be close for me.
I just don't know even what the justification is. Like, Genty had a really bad year last year. Hampton had one good game. It was against the worst run defense in football. And then he was good like at when Vidal got hurt against the Cowboys. Like those guys, they didn't, I think we all think they're better than what they showed, but they didn't really show that much last year, even that, you know, given their pedigree, especially.
Right. But last year, both of them had to deal with offensive line injuries. Both of them had play callers that were suspect. And I'm being nice with that term. And they were rookies. It was their first time in the league. Hampton especially had to deal with an injury. I'm not saying we have to give them a clean slate, but we're trying to look forward here. And both of their situations have gotten better. Both of them have a year's worth of experience under their belt. And so I don't know if it's disqualifying for one or both of them that they had a bad year as a rookie.
No, it's certainly not disqualifying. But I don't think they've proven anything that should put that would put them ahead. So you're speculating.
No. Bijan didn't have the best rookie year. And we still chased after him pretty hard in his second year.
And were we justified in that?
I would say so. He went from 14.5 PPR points to 20.1.
As a second year guy? Yeah. All right, so then we can go to Derrick Henry here. Yeah, he's 46 years old and still finishes at top. Sorry, I'm...
It wouldn't surprise me at this point if he's still doing it.
I'm just predicting our show in 2040. We're going to be talking about Derrick Henry in the second round. He's 32 years old. It was number 7 running back last year. Heath, what'd you say?
I said that was really good quick math.
I hope I got it right. Jamie, what do you think about Henry compared to the two young dudes?
I mean, look, obviously the safety factor is there for Derrick Henry. If you just want to believe in his track record, it's tried and true, you know, from Tennessee to Baltimore. It's just been very productive. As I said yesterday, like you could clearly see the path to him leading the league in rushing yards, to leading the league in rushing touchdowns. He's not going to be heavily involved in the passing game. He's brought up two very big concerns. You know, losing Linderbaum and losing Ricard are potentially two things that he has to overcome and may struggle with, because obviously the offensive line is not as good right now. They're still trying to figure out who their center is going to be. And losing Ricard may be something that's a problem for him. That being said, he's been very successful with Lamar Jackson. He's been very successful in this environment. And it was kind of the, you know, I always go back to the argument we made when he left Tennessee and came to Baltimore. What he's shown, which makes a ton of sense given his profile, is when he's on a winning team, he is extremely successful. When they're playing from behind, he's not on the field. He doesn't have the chance to do what he's capable of to the same extent. And so I think if you still believe in Baltimore, which is hard not to, you know, given even with the coaching change, you know, losing Harbaugh is going to be something that may be problematic. But still, you're looking at a roster that's still very good, at a team that I think is still meant to compete. And as long as Lamar Jackson is healthy, they will be in contention to win the division and potentially make a Super Bowl run. So I think Derrick Henry, you have to get over the age concerns. Can he continue to defy father time? You just know what you're getting. You know, and I think mid-round 2 is a perfect spot for him. If you want to put him ahead of probably 4 or 5 of the running backs that we talked about, you know, as I said yesterday, Jonathan Taylor, James Cook, Derrick Henry, their profiles, I think, are very, very set in stone. You know, nothing's really going to change. Hampton could be all over the place. Jenty could be all over the place. Chase Brown without Samaje Perine, very different numbers than what he gave you last year. Achane in his situation. You know, again, just looking at a lot of different things here. I think just Derrick Henry, you know, is kind of one of the safer picks around.
So, you know, sorry, got distracted. Let's say you're up in the, you know, 14, 15, 16 range in your draft. And these running backs are all on the board. Hampton, Jenty, Henry. Do you find yourself taking them? Do you find yourself taking a different position? I think that, you know, there's a chance, especially if you get to the middle of round 2, right? You get to 18. You know, you could pass maybe on these guys and hopefully get Walker or Love in the third round.
Kyron,
yeah, if you like. So I'm just wondering, what are
Jacobs for sure in round 3 now.
Yeah, right. What are your tendencies, though, when you're on the clock in this range and you're looking at Jenty and Hampton and Henry specifically?
What'd you do in round 1?
You took a wide receiver.
So you took, let's say, St. Brown, and then you're looking at the group of most likely Pickens, Brown, A.J. Brown, Nico, Rashee Rice, those type of players?
Yeah, and the tight ends.
And the tight ends. And then you're hoping for, I would probably lean running back here just to get the player that I want.
But who's the player you want? Who's your, you know, you like these
guys? For me, it would be Walker. If Walker's there, I would take Walker ahead of the 2 second-year running backs and Henry.
My five players in the rankings from 15 to 19 are Rice, Jefferson, Hampton, Jeanty, Henry. So that's kind of where I'd be.
Yeah, I think Rice makes a lot of sense. He'll move up the rankings, you know.
He will. Yeah, if there's no suspension coming and his knee's okay participating in camp.
I haven't really made my decisions yet about this group. It's a tricky group. Like, I don't draft Justin Jefferson. I'm nervous about Jefferson. I don't draft Ashton Jeanty much. I'm nervous about him. I think when it comes down to it, and I have to make these decisions, I want to tie myself to the better offenses here, which isn't always the easiest thing to predict, but I definitely think the Chargers are going to have a better offense than the Raiders, and that's why I'm going.
But you did that with your A.J. Brown selection.
Yeah, I do, and I think A.J. Brown's another guy. Like, let's say his ADP, his ADP, I think, is actually higher than, like, where you guys have him ranked, but he's 21st right now on Fantasy Pros. But I really could see that going up to the, you know, 16, 17 range.
I think that's where I have him.
Okay, because I thought he was, like, in CBS ADP.
He's 22 for me.
Okay, where is he in the consensus rankings? He's 20. Well, Heath has him pretty low. So
who?
AJ Brown.
Oh, he's 28th in the consensus ring.
Right. So,
You want me to move him up a little so he goes up?
No, that's all right. I just don't think he's going to be a third round pick in most leagues. But yeah, I think he belongs in this discussion. But I guess I'm just saying, like, it's really tough to make these calls. There are going to be factors that are completely out of your control. I'm going to try to, if it's close, I'm going to go with the better offenses, or which teams I think will have the better offenses. So for me, it's Hampton over Jeanty.
But how do you have Hampton and Henry?
I can't stand it anymore with Derrick Henry. I'm wrong every year. I actually think Saquon Barkley is, I think I'd take Barkley over Henry.
I would too.
I would three.
I have Barkley one spot behind Henry.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a similar profile, but I think more catches, definitely more catches, potentially a lot more catches this year.
Potentially.
But, I mean, he needs six more catches for every one more touchdown that Henry scores than him.
That's true, but you also get the receiving yards, you know, with the... Look, it's tough. It's really tough. I think for me, and I don't want people to just do what I'm doing or anything, but I think Jefferson and Jeanty are two guys that I'm not drafting, because I'm worried that their offenses are going to hold them back compared to the other guys in this range.
So you feel the same about Achane and Isom?
No. No,
because Achane might wipe both of those guys off the board. But
that's interesting, though, because I think from a talent standpoint, you could clearly make a very easy comparison. Jefferson's talent at his position, Achane's talent at his position, like, they're two of the best that we've seen in the last five years.
Yeah.
I think the more the thing that I struggle with, like, and we talked about it with Achane already, but like Achane might just be their entire offense.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It's a good thing until it's not.
I think with Achane, you know, he's arguably been the best running back in the NFL since he's come in the league. You know, I'm assuming he leads in yards per carry in the last 3 years. Yep. He averaged like
5.6 for his career. It's insane.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, but I don't think he's the best running back, but he's up there.
Just makes me like Omari and Hampton more, because I don't know how much of that is Achane versus how much of that is how he was schemed by McDaniel.
Gosh, Jamie, remember that fourth down play where Tua threw to him, fourth and goal, he threw to him at like the 10-yard line like an idiot, and Achane made everyone miss and scored?
Mm-hmm. He's amazing.
That's Achane. That's not McDaniel.
Listen, it's the same thing about McCaffrey. Like, if he does do what Heath just said, and he's their entire offense, and he just dominates touches and stays healthy and is still involved in the passing game, because I think that's big, you know, so.
It's huge.
Can he score, like, you say 12 touchdowns isn't a lot. I think that's a pretty good number for what this offense is going to probably produce.
It's
going
to have to be at least 4 receiving touchdowns, I think.
I think it's going to have to be just north of 10 touchdowns to some degree, you know, 10 or 10 or more, you know, for him to justify being taken in the first 12 overall picks, if not just the first 15 overall picks. But he's going to have to be north of 50 catches. He's probably going to have to be 1,500 plus total yards. Like, it could certainly happen. I mean, he's that good of a player. And so I think the one thing about the Dolphins is, like, if you remove, which is hard to do, if you remove the quarterback and the receiving core, the roster is not that terrible.
But I mean, I'm discouraged about all the bad reports about Malik Willis because I thought he played very well. He's,
you know, I'll go back to what said. I think it was last week. Like, when you're going to read stuff about training camp and minicamp stuff, like, he's not going to look pretty. There's going to be things that he does that just are not going to be aesthetically right in terms of what you're judging quarterback play on. He's a playmaker. Like, that's what is going to be the thing that defines him and defines this team and this offense. Like, you saw it in Green Bay last year. You know, when he had to start those 2.5 games, whatever it was, play in those 2.5 games, like, he's going to make some incredible throws. He's going to make some incredible plays. And I think, just given the fact that the lack of talent around him, he's going to look bad at times. Like, you know, I think it was the Miami Herald report saying that Quinn Ewers looked better than him. Well, I'm sure Quinn Ewers, when it, you know, they're asking him to throw a simple out route or something like that, he's going to probably do it with a little bit more. He's going to be boring in doing it and get the job done.
Yeah.
Like, Malik Willis is going to make a 50-yard throw that Quinn Ewers can't make, or, you know, a play or extend a play or do the things that, you know, a borderline superstar quarterback can do. He just doesn't do it consistently enough. So there's just a lot of flaws with the Dolphins and a lot of flaws with this team. And that's the concern I have with HM.
All right, let's take a look at George Pickens here, our last player in players 13 through 18. Pickens is 18th in our consensus PPR rankings. And, you know, I want to show our producer today, Sam, made a couple of graphics here. I want to show you guys this just for some context of big ADP risers from 2024 to 2025 and how they do, because Pickens is obviously a really big riser. So Trey McBride, unfortunately, a lot of these players got hurt, but Trey McBride went up 18 spots. That was a great pick. Malik Nabers went up 40 spots. He got hurt. George Kittle, 19 spots. So this is, again, this is from 2024 to 2025, the biggest ADP risers that I found. Kittle was a good pick. Burrow and Higgins, they were up about 30 spots each because they were coming off bad 2023 seasons and then good 2024 seasons. I mean, it's kind of hard to evaluate them. McLaurin, though, he was a bad pick. He went up 32 spots. Pollard was a bad pick. He was a 17-spot riser. Xavier Worthy was a terrible pick, but he got hurt. McLaurin got hurt. You know, so many of these guys got hurt. Romo Odunze was a good pick. He went up 17 spots. Jackson Smith and Jigba went up 45 spots from 2024 to 2025, and now he's going up another 20-something. He was a great pick. Take a look at the next page, though. Now, all these guys here were picked about pick 100 or later in 2023. Some of them way behind that, like Tyjae Spears went up 84 spots. Brock Bowers went up 81 spots. He got hurt. Jaden Daniels, 72 spots. He got hurt. McConkey, Chase Brown, Cortland Sutton, Brian Thomas Jr., Jameson Williams, TJ Hawkinson. Here's my point. You have a lot of guys every year that are going to rise in ADP because they had their first good year. And Pickens is that guy. He's one of those guys this year. A lot of the players on this list were busts last year. So I do have that thought with George Pickens. I understand the situations were very, very different compared to his first three seasons, but it's a big jump to be taking him 18th overall. Dave, do you have any concerns about him being able to repeat a terrific season where he finished as wide receiver 6 per game?
I have concerns about him hitting the ceiling. We can split up his year any way you want to figure out what his true average per game is. But overall on the year, he was at 17.2 PPR points per game. And that's right around where he was in 6 games with Lamb and Quinn and Williams late in the year for Dallas. It's a small sample size. Here's my problem. I recognize that he can be good. I don't know if I love the idea of taking a number 2 wide receiver, or maybe a co-number 1 wide receiver on his own team within the first 2 rounds of the fantasy draft. I don't know if we've done that very often.
Now here's this
player who had a great year. A lot of his best numbers came when CeeDee Lamb was hurt. And we're expecting Dallas to have a better defense this year. Maybe they don't throw quite as much as they did last year. This isn't a question about talent, and he should still get plenty of opportunities. But, man, I have had a hard time clicking his name at 20th overall, 21st overall, when there's some damn good tight ends that could be differentiators for my fantasy team, running backs that can be good starters for my fantasy team, and knowing that there's going to be receivers that maybe don't have the same upside as George Pickens, but can still be reliable starters waiting for me in rounds 3, 4, 5, and even 6.
I mean, certainly you had Chase and Higgins, with Higgins going kind of early round 3, maybe close to the 2-3 turn.
Yeah, he went in round 2 sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. If Pickens really does go 18, I'm not quite sure he will. I feel like this would be the earliest we've ever had two wide receivers from the same team go off the board, at least that I can think of.
I think
Moss and Edelman, or Welker rather, one of those guys in New England, maybe way back in the day.
Heath, what were you gonna say?
I think like the sample that, and I'm sure you've got an Azer stat that's a little better than this one, but week 7 through 17, after Lamb came back, and not counting week 18, it was 16.8 fantasy points per game for Pickens, 16.1 for Lamb. They both scored 3 touchdowns in 10 games. I think certainly for Pickens, we'd expect for him to score at a higher rate than that. I've got him right in this range. I actually have him one spot ahead of Jefferson. But I think both of those guys could have monster seasons, could step back a little bit, at least. Well, Jefferson's going to be better than he was last year, but could not be quite that good. But I'm pretty comfortable with Pickens in round 2. I just think you're going to see Dallas probably throw the ball a lot, and you're going to see a high percentage of the targets go to those top 2 wide receivers.
Another example of teammate wide receivers being drafted in the first 24 picks, not 18. I don't know that I can find that, but Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill had a year like that.
Did we never have a Cup Puka year where they were that high?
I don't think so.
Probably Puka's second year.
It would have had to have been, but even then, I'm not sure we were crazy about Cooper Kupp and going into 2024. I'd have to go back and
look. No, he was 35th.
Yeah, so that's a no.
But look, it worked out, I think, with Higgins, but you know, he's been kind of like a wide receiver 15 per game kind of guy, not 6 or 7.
And not a second round pick. Unlike, he was kind of around the 2-3 turn last year, was he not?
Been in that. Let's see. I think it's 2022, or 2023 rather, he was. He was 29th. So this is very early. This is very early.
The better question is probably not have we done this before, but have wide receivers on the same team justified this before?
I can probably tell you.
I'm looking at it. We had a year where Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen both scored 16.8 and 16.9 fantasy points per game in 2020.
Yeah. I have a whole list of like teammate wide receivers who finished top 15, see what the best ones were. But Jamie, what do you think of George Pickens in the middle of round 2?
It's a little early for me, but I mean, obviously I get the appeal. You know, if we're hoping that we're going to get the same level of production from both receivers, I think we get a little bit better Lamb this season and a little bit worse Pickens this season, just because I think what we saw from Pickens last year may be the peak, and that's not bad, obviously, but I just think we get a little bit regression from him in the wrong direction. I also think, you know, Dave's brought this up quite a bit, that the Dallas defense is going to improve significantly, and so we may not see as many pass attempts from the Cowboys offense. Now, this other part is a little hard to buy, but, you know, again, reports are reports that they really like what they've seen from Ryan Flannoy and what he's going to potentially be able to do. Jake Ferguson's still going to be in the mix, and we'll see how this run game, you know, sort of continues to build off what they did last year with Javonte Williams. So I think George Pickens is a very good number 2 receiver. I actually prefer him toward the back end of round 2. I would rather have A.J. Brown. I would rather have Nico Collins. I know that's probably not the way that's going to get drafted, clearly based on what our consensus rankings are and probably how ADP goes, especially in the case of A.J. Brown. But I would also take a handful of running backs over him. And I think, as we've kind of alluded to, Rashi Rice, for me, right now is ahead of Pickens and probably will end up being that way as well once we get to, you know, August and average draft position sort of, you know, looks like it's going to look. So I just think Pickens is in a great spot. I love the fact that he's showing up despite not getting his contract extension. I hope that's going to be the case and we don't get a hold in and he's not practicing in camp, because you know how that'll go for me at least. But in what it seems to be trending toward, that he's playing for a big deal. I hope he's, you know, a good soldier and goes out and has another monster season. And this is where he's just start to come off the board. So again, if you took a running back in round 1, so you went McCaffrey or I'm trying to think of anybody else in this range. McCaffrey, Taylor, you know, those guys have H-hands in this mix. James Cook, you know, and you want to go receiver in round two, and you like Pickens better than, again, the guys that we have from a consensus standpoint. If you like him better than Rice, better than in Heath's case, Jefferson, but, you know, just looking at the consensus rankings, better than Nico, better than A.J. Brown, I certainly can't fault you for what Pickens did last year and hopefully will once again do this season.
Okay, here are some wide receivers. Let's put this criteria. Over the last 10 seasons, teammate wide receivers that both finished top 12, top 10? What do you want to do?
Top 12.
Both finished top 12. One of them finished, let's say, at least wide receiver 6. Does that work? Or 7?
I'd be okay if they're both top 12, even if they were 11 and 12.
Okay. There's a decent amount. Jordy Nelson and Devontae Adams. Michael Thomas and Brandon Cooks. They had Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees throwing to them.
Well, are you going to tell us what happened the year after, or is that for us to...
No, this is just examples of it happened.
Sure.
Once upon a time, Marvin Jones and Golden Tate were wide receivers 11 and 12. Antonio Brown and Juju. Adam Thielen and Diggs. Let's see. Metcalf and Lockett. Jefferson and Thielen. Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. And last year we had Puka and Adams. I don't know if we had anyone else last year. I will say
it happens almost every year.
The problem with that is that that's overall, not per game. I probably will lose some of them on a per game basis, but
gain some.
Right.
I think we had a Jamar Chase, T. Higgins season where Higgins didn't didn't we last year have Lamb and Pickens?
Yeah, my issue with that is
a cup year two in there too.
A lot of times with that situation is you have guys go off when the other guy is out, and then they both are like look better on a per game basis. Devontae Smith is a perfect example of that because the AJ Brown Devontae Smith one, like we know Devontae Smith is nowhere near that good when Dallas Goedert and AJ Brown are healthy. When one of those guys is out, he's sensational. But either way, I mean, look, there are plenty of examples, and you usually have good quarterbacks, by the way. So that it's a good thing for Dak. All right.
No Cooper and Crabtree in there, or too far back?
I don't. Cooper and Crabtree. Let's see.
Yes.
Crabtree and Cooper were 12th and 16th. They were not quite make the list.
Oh, yeah. Per game, we had two in 24. We had Chase Higgins and we had Godwin Evans.
2024? Okay. Or 2025? Yeah, 2024.
We had a Keenan Allen, Mike Williams.
Wow.
Did he play 3 games?
Mike Williams?
Yeah.
He did.
We also technically that year had Garrett Wilson and Devontae Adams. I did not count that one because Wilson was wide receiver 22 after the Adams trade. But they both did finish top 12 overall. But Wilson wasn't anywhere near that per game. So I like per game better, but it's not a perfect exercise one way or the other. All right. Well, that's 13 through 18. Achan, Jefferson, Hampton, Genty, Henry, and George Pickens. We still have some phenomenal players to talk about. We haven't gotten to the tight ends yet. So tomorrow, 19 through 24, Saquon, Nico, Rashee Rice, Kenneth Walker, Bowers, and McBride. That's what it is right now. It's possible that'll change if someone updates their rankings today, but I don't think it will. And I think what's so interesting, like look at that 6, right? You got Barkley, Collins, Rice, Walker, Bowers, McBride. After that, I mean, you do have A.J. Brown after that, but you have Higgins, Olave, Kyren, A.J. Brown. Not that many guys that I... Well, Jacobs is there too. Not that many guys that can sneak into that top 24, I think. All right, well, we'll talk to you tomorrow, folks. Have a great day. It's for Dave, Jamie, and Heath. I'm Adam. This has been Fantasy Football Today. See ya.
Paramount Podcasts.
Everything has to come to an end.
Now streaming only on Paramount Plus. The acclaimed series, The Chi, reaches its final chapter.
We from Chicago. It's my home.
From Emmy Award winner Lena Waithe.
There are two types of people in this world. Those that reach for more and those that just enjoy what they got. This The Chi.
anything's possible.
Singing this song to you.
The Chi, the final season now streaming, only on Paramount+.